Welcome to another edition of the View from the Bleachers Radio Podcast. I am your host, Joe Aiello, and today I am flying solo. Well, sort of. I've got a guest on the show with us today. Josh is out on assignment. Sean is still out covering the Winter Olympics in Sochi. And so today we are joined by Chris Neitzel. He's an author, and we'll be talking a little bit about his new book, Beyond Bartman, Curses and Goats, 105 Reasons Why It's Been 105 Years. But in the meantime, I just want to remind you, subscribe to the show on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate your feedback on there in the form of a review and a rating. Right now, we have so few ratings that we can't get past some of those graveyards of podcasts that are on the Cubs site that just aren't in existence anymore. So the more you guys can do the job on your end, the more listeners we'll be able to have, and it kind of validates a little bit about what we're doing. So we would greatly appreciate that. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. My handle is at VFTB. That's an acronym for View from the Bleachers. You can also follow Josh at JCStats, and also follow Sean at Powell_Sean, S-E-A-N. And don't forget to email the show, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. That's where you send on any of your feedback, as well as mailbag questions. We'd love to hear them via the email or the Twitter, Facebook page. You can like us there, or just go to the blog, viewfromthebleachers.com. We'd love to hear your feedback there. So I mentioned before, we've got a guest today, Chris Neitzel, author. And Chris, we're glad to have you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Joe. I really appreciate it. It's nice to kind of connect via Twitter. And thanks for having me on. Love talking Cubs at any time of the year.
Well, we're glad to have you, especially on short notice. We were kind of given the last-minute notice that Josh wasn't going to be able to be on the show, so we are very grateful. I'm sure the listeners are grateful that I don't have to go all Colin Cowherd on them and be a one-man booth. I really only know two people that do media one-man booths, and that's Colin Cowherd and also Vin Scully, and I cannot stand the product put out by either of them. I know that that's sacrilege with some with Vin Scully, but I just am not a big fan of the one-man shows of any kind.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing of the past, and it's a fine line. Now, you know, two or three is great, but watch some of these NFL things with five or six guys. Right. It's a little different.
Well, I mentioned the book, Beyond Bartman, Curses and Goats, 105 Reasons Why It's Been 105 Years, which I just got my copy in the mail the other day and looking forward to finishing it up. But I want to tell a little bit about people where they can find you. I'm going to try to not get this Twitter handle wrong, but it's at BBCG105Reasons. That's on Twitter. And I guess that stands for at Beyond Bartman, Curses right. and Goats, 105 right. Reasons. So tell us a little bit about how the book came about. What inspired you to write a 300-page book that details 105 reasons why, unfortunately, it's been 105 years since we've won a World Series?
Well, I was writing in a couple different message boards, just, you know, a couple Cub sites. And, you know, I'm a teacher and I'm off during the summer, which is nice. And one morning I was laying in bed and thinking about an idea that the title actually just kind of hit me. I know that kind of sounds kind of goofy or whatever, that in the middle of a dream, I just had this Beyond Bartman, Curses and Goats, 100, and at that time it was 104 reasons. And I thought, wow, this is a good idea. No one's ever really done this. So I sat down that summer, which would have been the summer of 12, actually, is when I wrote most of the book. And I just sat down and started writing, and I basically mapped out the different categories and just thought, this is a good idea. No one's ever thought rationally of reasons why they haven't won. We hear about the silly curses and the goats and poor Steve Bartman. And so that was really my inspiration. So then it was just that summer breaking it down into categories and a lot of research on baseballreference.com and came up with 104 of them. And then last fall, then, you know, I was able to add 105th and update the book. And then what was nice was I was able to update it and put some of the reviews on there. And as you can see on your copy, I was fortunate enough, Dave Kaplan, you know, I got his quote right on the front that says a must read for all Cub fans, that kind of a thing. So it's a process that I learned, you know, when you self-publish and go through a publishing company, as opposed to that, I mean, but that's where I got the idea. And it's just a matter of getting the word out now.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm looking forward to reading it. I got my copy in the mail the other day, and I admit I haven't even had a chance to read it yet. I'm a little disappointed that I haven't even had a chance to pick it up other than looking at the cover. But I'm excited about it. Unfortunately, it's probably going to make me frustrated, but I kind of go into it knowing that. And I think when you go into it knowing that, it kind of eases the pain a little bit. But thankfully, I haven't been around for all 105 years, so I don't think it'll be too bad. I'm just not looking forward to the Bartman chapter.
Well, that was kind of the idea, was actually to, you know, it's an error by Alex Gonzalez. It's not a Steve Bartman missed pop-up down the left field line. So that was kind of the idea that when I went in, and that's, you know, to give a rational, honest reasons. And I get a lot of people that say what you just said is, oh, it's going to be too painful. Actually, it's written from a fun perspective. And it's and I got a lot of questions. People said, are you a Cub fan? You must not be a Cub fan if you did this. I'm like, no. It's just, you know, it's a way to look at what's been an amazing history, really. And a lot of things that could have been done differently, I guess.
Right. So other than being a lifelong fan, because I'm assuming, obviously, most of the people, if they're a Cub fan, are a Cub fan for life because of the fact that why else would you still be a fan? Although we'll address that in a mailbag question a little bit later. What qualifies you to write this book? Is there anything that kind of differentiates you or anything that you bring to the table that really makes you somebody that says, oh, you know what, this guy knows what he's talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question, because a lot of people, they're self-publishing now. Pretty much anybody can write a book if you sit down and you've got the time and you want to do it. I was a Cub bat boy for a day. So I put that in the book, and, you know, I don't know if that qualifies me or not, but, you know, I did a lot of writing in high school, and I actually won a couple literary awards. I probably should have gone that way, but like a lot of people, I had dreams of playing in the major leagues, and, you know, I was pursuing athletics up to a pretty long period of time. And then I got into teaching and coaching, and, you know, like a lot of frustrated athletes do, I went into coaching, and I had a great time coaching. I coached for 22 years. And, you know, if it wasn't for parents, I could coach forever. But, so I have a lot of experience coaching baseball, and, actually coached a lot of, different sports and dealing with people. And then just, you know, I would say that, you know, being a fan for as long as I have, and following as closely as I have, I don't think I know any more than anybody else does about the Cubs, but I did do a heck of a lot of research this summer, or that summer when I wrote the book. And I think I can bring a pretty good perspective. And like anybody, you know, I was a guest speaker at a library back in the fall, and I had a lot of people ask me about being an expert. And I say, hey, we're all experts in the Cubs. We really are. It's just a matter of I had the time and the wherewithal to sit down and kind of research this and write this out, I guess.
Sure. Now, obviously, when you're trying to come up with 105 reasons, That's a tall order, even though it's been so long. Were there any reasons that particularly stuck in your craw a little bit?
Well, you know, what's interesting is what started it out was the night before I read an article about the pitch counts back in 2003. And so that was like my first reason. That's what I was going to write about the next morning. But then when I had the thought of, well, you know what, this is a good idea to think of all the different reasons. So that's kind of where it started, when I read this article about Kerry Wood throwing, you know, 140 pitches in a game in April of that year of 2003, or of, you know, all the different, the wear and tear on their arms down the line. So I knew that was going to be one of the reasons. Then it was just a matter of dividing it up. So I looked at guys they traded away, near misses. What we don't, you know, what you don't realize as Cub fans, you know, back in the 1930s, it had been a great time to be a Cub fan. They were a dynasty. They were in the World Series almost, you know, like I think 4 years in an 8 year stretch. They just couldn't get past the Yankees and the Tigers and the Philadelphia A's. So I did, you know, a lot of historical research on them, near misses, guys they traded away, things like that. But then there's always these, you know, things that you'd guess. What was kind of a satisfying thing about it was, you know, for years we say, well, the Cubs don't walk enough. Well, sure enough, I'd start off with a premise like that. You know, the Cubs have won 95 games just three times since 1908. And each time that they've won 95 games, they've led the league in walks. So it was a thing of something like that, that I was doing the research. So I was like, wow, this, you know, I'd start off with a premise and I'd be like, wow, this really does connect. Or lack of left-handed power. You know, the Yankees have the most left-handed home runs, and they hate, oddly enough, you know, they have a lot of World Series. But everybody knows that. But what was surprising to me was the Cardinals are second in left-handed home runs. And their second in World Series. So there are a lot of things that historically we as Cub fans have always said, yeah, they don't walk, they don't do this. And research-wise, it proves out to be right.
Boy, I think you just gave me another reason to be disappointed. I had not put two and two together that the Cubs had only won 95 games as few times as they have. I'm going to have to look that up and pray that you're wrong there, but I have a feeling that I'm not going to be satisfied and see that I'm wrong. That's discouraging. I guess you could take comfort in the fact that, you know, the 162 game season hasn't been around as long, but really ultimately three times is not acceptable. But
well, if off the top of my head, if I'm not mistaken, it's 84 in 2000 in either 7 or 8, they won 95 games. See, they didn't win it. They didn't win 95 games in 2003.
Right.
You know, the thing is when you really research their history, after the World Series appearance in 45, from 45 till 69, they were just, you know, really, really bad. I mean, it is just a 24 year stretch of nothing, you know, like 8th or 9th or 10th every year. So I started following them in the 70s, which was, you know, they were very mediocre. And then, you know, people that really started following them in 84 on, I really don't know how good you have had it compared to people that have, you know, followed them longer than that. You know, like my dad was born in 45. So as a kid, he saw those just awful years. So really, as far as Cubs history goes, the last 30 years haven't been that bad, believe it or not.
No, I think we're very fortunate in the time that we've grown up in, that we've seen a lot better Cubs baseball, if that's even possible. But, yeah, so the book, I'm looking forward to it again, Beyond Bartman, Curses and Goats, 105 Reasons Why It's Been 105 Years. Chris, where can people find the book? How do they get it? How do they pick it up? Where can they pick that up at?
Well, it's on Amazon.com. It's on, you know, you buy it on Amazon. You can buy it at BarnesandNoble.com as well. There's a couple other online sites, Instagram, I think it's called, or Ingram, that I'm not as familiar with. I've set up, if you contact me on Twitter, I've set up an email that I've got that my readers can contact me, that I get feedback from. And also, if anybody just wants to buy one directly, that I can sign and send it off to them. I started doing that. I met an author named Dan Epstein who wrote a great book about the 70s called Big Hair and Plastic Grass. I got to know him a little bit, and he does the same thing. And, you know, he's a big time author guy. So I'm like, well, if he can do that, I'll offer that to, any fans that I've had out there. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know, I can give you all kinds of ways, but Amazon is the quickest and the easiest, obviously.
And I was about to complain that I did not get an autographed copy, but that shows that I have not even opened the cover.
No, I autographed.
Because I see now my warm note and autograph on my copy, so I'm looking forward now even more to reading it. Just to let readers know and listeners know, you can even pick the book up on Amazon Kindle.
Yes.
It's $5.49, which is a heck of a price for a Kindle book on Amazon. So check that out, $5.49 on Kindle. It looks like it's paperback right now. Looks like $13 or so. Yeah. We'll get you the book.
And just so you know, at the convention, because I did work the Cubs convention. It was great. Got to meet – my booth was next to Pat Hughes, which I couldn't have been luckier. And I can't tell you what – I can't tell you what a more classier guy. I've never been more impressed with a – you know, if you want to call him a celebrity, whatever, but he was just the most gracious, humble man that I've met. But basically what I was going to get at is that I was charging a penny for my my inscription there. So right now that autograph is worth a penny to you, Joe, and maybe it'll be worth more eventually.
Well, I'll have to keep checking the Beckett guides to see what it's going for. Funny story about Pat Hughes. I want to echo a little bit about what you said. And I don't know if I've ever shared this story with people before, but when I was first starting the blog, you know, you really don't know what you're doing or anything like that. And one of the things that I did partly out of naivety is just I called the Cubs directly and said, I want to interview Pat Hughes. And sure enough, that evening my phone rang and my wife picked it up and said, hey, it's Pat Hughes. And I was like, what in the world? And so I'll never forget. I took the call. I said, hi, Pat. You know, thanks for calling me. I didn't expect you to call. I'm going to have to call you back. I'm watching the Illinois basketball game. And I had no way to record the interview. But Pat was very gracious. He said, yeah, no problem. Give me a call tomorrow at this time. And at the time, you know, we didn't have Skype or it wasn't as prevalent to do right. these type of things. And so I'll never forget, I went out to Best Buy. I bought a little reporter's recording device that used a little mini tapes. And I went to my wife's work because they had speakerphone. And I used her office that evening, and I put Pat on speakerphone with the recording device right next to it, and I recorded it that way. And I don't even remember how I got it on the blog other than just transcribing it. But Pat was so generous with his time. He shared with me for probably 45 minutes of just telling stories and just talking history of baseball and just really generous with his time. I really appreciate Pat Hughes and the work that he does. I'm a little disappointed that I don't get to listen to him, but you're right. He is a very, very generous man.
Yeah, real quick. I was so impressed because, you know, like Saturday, you know, it was a grind there. I got it. You know, I'm not used to sitting and, you know, and basically selling myself like I was for 15 hours or whatever Saturday, you know, because it was 8:30 to 7 or whatever it was Saturday afternoon at the convention. And, you know, he was when he wasn't getting called upstairs to, you know, to play Cubs Jeopardy or something like that. He sat there the entire time and, you know, every fan that he came up, he was gracious to in time. And, you know, just it was just so refreshing to see a guy that humble and, you know, that gracious.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, again, the book Beyond Bartman, Curses and Goats, 105 Reasons Why It's Been 105 Years by Chris Neitzel. Go out and check it out. Pick it up on Amazon. Pick it up. I wonder if you can buy it actually right from the publisher, WindyCityPublishers.com. You may be able to check out that site and pick it up right there as well. Well, Chris, since we've stolen you and we've got you, we figure we might as well use you for the rest of the podcast. And so we'll just move on with some of the news that's going on in the last week with the Cubs and kind of hit on some of these points real quickly because we want to keep the show nice and concise for the listeners. And we do got a couple of really interesting things that we're going to be talking about in just a second. But so let's just run down some of the news notes. First thing that I noted here on our notes was Jason Hamill and James McDonald, their deals were finally announced and made official. I got the press release earlier in the week. And what caught my eye was James McDonald was a big league deal, but it was originally reported to be a minor league deal. And I thought that was interesting because that's a guaranteed deal now that the Cubs have to pay should McDonald not make the roster, which what that tells me is there's probably a pretty good chance that McDonald will make the roster. Was there anything that surprised you about the fact that McDonald's deal was a major league deal?
Oh, definitely. And I think I had the same thoughts that you did you've got to trust the scouts and you've got to trust, you know, the big league scouts during the year that see people. And then, you know, maybe people seen him throw in the offseason, but they obviously have seen something in McDonald they've liked to go with the major league deal. That I think you hit it right on the head when you said that obviously he's somebody that they. But and once again, I think that what has been this the MO here of the guys the last couple of years is he's another guy that could fit as a flip candidate that you know, if he does start off well, if he's able to harness what he did a couple of years ago. You know, he's definitely a guy that could give somebody an innings, you know, give an innings eater or at least, you know, another starter. And I think you're right. I think he's going to be part of the rotation.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. And it kind of goes with the next note. Jake Arrieta was reported as having some shoulder tightness and some shoulder issues. We've heard conflicting reports at this time whether or not he'll be ready for opening day. He's taking it slow at this point. He's got a month and a half, but it has to worry you a little bit. This is a guy that they were counting on to be a number four starter in this rotation behind Edwin Jackson. And I think that might have something to do with the fact that McDonald was a big league deal. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with Arrieta. He says he'll be ready. The Cubs have said that he may not be ready. So I think it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, it's definitely not locked in stone, whereas opposed to Starlin Castro, who was announced as the starting shortstop. I found this funny, and I'll tell you why. I don't know why Renteria announced Starlin Castro as a starting shortstop, because there really isn't any competition at that job right now. So it seems a little funny to announce him as a starting shortstop. Why not then go ahead and announce Wellington Castillo as the starting catcher? You know, why not go ahead and, you know, identify Anthony Rizzo as the starting first baseman? It just seems silly. It was almost like, okay, this is the given. What were they trying to accomplish here?
Well, the only thing that I can make out of that is that it's a preemptive shot of any Baez controversy. I mean, that to me, that's maybe they're saying this is, you know, maybe they've seen enough And they've said, you know what, we project Castro as more of a shortstop, where Baez is going to be a third baseman or a second baseman. Because you're right, it doesn't make any sense to single out Castro as opposed to Rizzo or, you know, Castillo or, you know, whoever else. So I that's the only thing I could say is maybe they're trying to nip that in the bud, but Baez is starting shortstop at, or is, if he's, if, assuming he's at Iowa, which there's no reason he's not going to be, I think, just from the arbitration clock alone, that they're saying Castro's the guy that's going to be at shortstop, and when Baez is ready to play, he's going to play another position.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it was probably just to preempt any kind of hot start by Javier Baez in spring training that basically just says, look, before you get anything crazy going on in your head, Starlin Castro's our shortstop for right now. But, you know, everything is so up in the air. I made the prediction, I believe it was 2 weeks ago on our first episode of the podcast. We were playing a game, and I said, I presented to the other two co-hosts that, like it or strike it, Starlin Castro would be the starting shortstop for this team in 2014 by the end of the year, and they both liked it. And I said, or it was something like that, and I basically came out and said, listen, by September 1st, I'm predicting that Javier Baez will have made at least 15 starts for the Cubs at short. And I couldn't narrow down at whether that was due to injury or just overall development, but I really feel strongly that Javier Baez is the future shortstop of this team. And we'll see what happens. But I think it was an interesting move. Another announcement that came out of the Cubs camp was that Justin Grimm had been moved to the bullpen. This was kind of a note that was kind of ho-hum. I didn't really factor Justin Grimm into the starting mix anyways, and so it is what it is. And we'll talk a little bit about whether or not he's going to make the opening day roster a little bit later. Also noted were that Luis Valbuena and Donnie Murphy were going to be the starting third baseman platoon, but unless Michael can beat them out. So basically we were told nothing there. but I thought that one was interesting, and we'll, like I said, get into a little bit of a discussion on who our third baseman of the opening day roster is in just a little bit. And then the last note was that Jose Veras was the closer. This one I thought was a little bit strange also to announce because of the fact that Veras, yes, was brought into because of his closing experience, but at the same time, they really looked at Pedro Strop last year as the heir apparent after Kevin Gregg was gone. And so I think to just come out and say Veras was the closer takes away a little bit of the competition. I think if you leave that job open, then Pedro Strop has something to really try for and really aspire to. Whereas now you're basically saying, look, you're going to end up basically being the setup guy.
The only thing that I – once again, I'll use this term again, flip candidate. You know, I think that Theo, if you look at his, he's always looking for like a market inequity or something, a way to stock. And when, since the, you know, the old way was the free agent compensation, you know, for draft picks, which they took that away. And I think that they're really each year, these last couple of years, they want to be players at July 31st. And without, unless Samardzija becomes that starter, you know, like they had Garza last year and Mahomes, and actually they had Garza and Feldman last year. I think by saying, hey, this is our closer, and if he does start off well, you know, that's a flippable asset that you have. That's the only, because you're right. I mean, I don't see, if you look at his history, you'd say, you know, long range, I'd rather be saying Strope could possibly be the guy, or Vizcaino, who you mentioned we're going to talk about later. So that's the only upside I can see is saying Deveras, hey, he's our closer to start the year.
Mm-hmm, most definitely. So not a real overall big news day or news week overall, but I think as things start to heat up in spring training and as position players begin to all pile into the camp, I think we'll start to see some things as games start to happen. We'll start to see the news picking up, and once we have actual statistics to go over with, and you know that's a whole other animal, spring training statistics. But I think it's going to lead to more news. Right now, it's just basically minor notes that we're getting out of camp, and it's just no fun to follow. But moving on, we've got some mailbag questions. Remember, you can submit your mailbag questions a couple of different ways. You can submit them to us on Twitter. To any of our Twitter accounts, and we'll get those right into the show. You can email them right to viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. Put podcast question in the subject line. We'll be sure to address it in the podcast. Also, if you want to post it on the website directly in the podcast post, you could just leave it right in the comment section. We'd be glad to get it there. So there's a lot of different ways that you can get interactive with us. We'd love to hear from you. And we've got two podcast questions here for the mailbag this week. that stood out to me, and these both came via Twitter. One is from one of our regular listeners, Doug, and then a new listener that I had not heard from before, Otis. So we'll start with Otis's question. He says, why did the Cubs stand still this offseason, and why sign Jeff Samardzija for one more year? Why not trade him if we're rebuilding for another 5 years? So, Otis, thanks for the question. Two different questions over, essentially there. Let's start, Chris, a little bit with the first question. Why did the Cubs stand still this offseason? Otis, I don't know that you could really say that they did stand still. I think they made every effort to go after Masahiro Tanaka, and they just got outbid. I think if your tune would have changed and your question would have changed had the announcement been that the Cubs had been the team that won that bidding war. And I think that that's what their plan was, is to go into it and say, hey, this is our guy, and we didn't get him. And that's all there is to it. Theo came out and admitted that they didn't spend all the money that was allocated to him this year, and it is what it is. But you know, other than Tanaka, when you really look at the free agent crop, what did you want them to go after? You know, I'd be curious to see. You know, feel free, Otis, to shoot back on Twitter some answers there. But I don't know really what you would have wanted them to go after. Chris, am I wrong on that?
No, those are exactly my thoughts. You know, you hear people all the time lamenting about the Cubs being cheap or things like that. And I think you're right. Tanaka was the only thing that made sense. You know, to see the escalation of some of what the other starters went for, mm-hmm. there'd be no way that I'd be interested in having those. Even Robinson Cano, would you want Robinson Cano right now after seeing like the Pujols deal and Josh right. Hamilton deal, what those have done? So there's really not much. The only thing that, and baseball, you know, it's changed so much, is the only thing that you could have possibly seen them is possibly trading for a cost controlled guy, a young guy, like say Giancarlo Stanton or somebody like that. That's the only move that would have made sense, which then you're going to have to give up prospects. So there were no free agents that really interest me unless you can get them on your terms on a very, very short, the low end where it's, you know, you're talking years and price. And Tanaka, even, you know, looking at Tanaka, that's maybe it's just rationalization now that they didn't get him, but that was a really gutsy, I mean, that's a big gamble there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's no sure thing. And so I do not fault them for not going crazy and getting anybody this offseason. You know, the landscape has changed. Free agents just do not come about until they're 30, 31 anymore. Teams learn their lesson. If you go way back to the 90s, the Cleveland Indians started doing it. You lock up your young guys, yep. and then, you know, and you want to take a gamble when they're 30, 31, you know. I heard Jed Hoyer make a very interesting comment that I thought kind of went under the radar. He said, with PEDs out of the game, youth is king. And I was really surprised nobody didn't really pick up on that, but it's true. 31, 32, 33 isn't what it used to be anymore. So, you don't want to spend that money on Robinson Cano, good luck, but I'm glad the Cubs didn't.
Yeah, I agree. And to get to your second question, Otis, why did the Cubs sign Jeff Samardzija for 1 year? That goes into basically just how the overall financial system works in baseball. To kind of put it in layman's terms, as easy to understand as possible, when a player comes up to the major leagues, they have 3 years where they are automatically renewed at a league minimum contract, basically. And they're essentially under team control. If the Cubs want to sign them and give them a raise, they can, but most teams don't. They leave them at an auto renewal rate. After year three, they begin to enter the eligible for arbitration phase. For 3 years, they're eligible for arbitration. Now, there are certain scenarios where the player can get 4 years of eligibility, but if we look at the norm, most people get 3 years of eligibility, this being one of Samardzija's. And so basically, the team has the right to either cut bait, release the player, and get nothing for them, which rarely ever happens, or you can offer them arbitration, which basically means that you submit your number as what you feel like the player is worth for 1 year. The player submits his number, and then if you guys can't agree on a contract, you will go before an arbiter, and the arbiter will listen to both cases and decide on one of the numbers. They cannot choose anything in the middle. They have to choose the player's number, or they have to choose the team's number, which means if the team lowballs the player, then obviously the arbiter will probably choose the player. So you run the risk of offering too low and losing your case, or from the player standpoint, asking for too much and losing your case. And whatever the arbiter says goes. So it's really not a fun process. It's a process where if you go to it, you're both sitting at the table making your case. And when you think about it from the team standpoint, you're saying, we want this guy to be a part of the team, but he sucks, and here's why he should get paid this much. So it's really not a fun process. The last time the Cubs had to go through it was with Ryan Terrio, and prior to that was with Mark Grace. So that tells you a little bit about how often it happens. It's very rare. And so usually teams end up splitting the difference with the player, what they're offering versus what the player wants, and you get a one-year deal and know that you have the right to continue to try to negotiate a longer-term deal. So that's why Smarja got it the way he did, to kind of put it as a quick and dirty explanation there. Hopefully that helps you, Otis, and thank you so much for submitting the question. And please do let me know a little bit about what you guys or what you would have liked to see this offseason. I would love to hear it. Second question comes from Doug on Twitter. Doug's one of our regular readers, regular listeners. And Doug writes, Joe, I bought a Strasburg shirt for my first ever non-Cubs purchase. Love the Cubs, but fun having a second team to pull for in crap Cub years. What's the equivalent of this from a relationship standpoint? Am I cheating on the Cubs or just innocently texting their hot friend? So, Doug, thank you for making me laugh with this question. First thing I wanted to point out in your question there was fun having a second team to pull for in crap Cub years. So basically that new team becomes your primary team because most years are crap Cub years. So I don't know if he realizes kind of what he's gotten into. I actually did this before. I don't know if you have, Chris, but I actually went mutiny a little bit and spent 2 years as a rogue Rays fan. And unfortunately, I did it right before they got really good. And then I bailed on the Rays. So,
well, yeah, I always, as a kid growing up, I'd always kind of pick an American League team.
Yeah.
And that would, you know, because you could rationalize it and say, well, it's a different league. And actually, it's funny, I was big on the Rays too, because I, back in the mid 2000s, a kid that I coached got drafted by them. So I was following them. I've always been kind of privy to the A's for some reason, because, when I was a kid, they were good. And then, you know, now the way Billy Beane does things. So I think it's okay to have another team, but I would suggest American League, because National League, the relationship thing there, that's you're getting close to cheating when you go National League. I think American League, you're okay.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think the more innocently texting their hot friend is more accurately describes a little bit about what the relationship is with Doug and the Nationals. Although I don't blame him. I've actually thought about starting to cheer for the Nationals, not because of any reason of that all of a sudden they're good, but realistically, according to Major League Baseball, that's my home team. And so, you know, even though I'm 5.5 hours away from Washington, D.C., according to Major League Baseball, they are my home market. And so I should be cheering for them. And I'll be honest with you, I love going to their park. I try to make it at least once a year. I didn't go last year, but I do love going to that park, and I do love watching that team play. It's a fun team to play. It's a fun team to watch. You got Bryce Harper and Strasburg, and it's just a fun team. I really enjoy watching Ryan Zimmerman. And so I think there's nothing wrong with watching another team, but I think what is wrong is if you decided, hey, I'm going to start watching this team more than I'm watching the Cubs, but still call myself a Cubs fan while I wait for the team to get good.
Yeah, that's I've never been able to do it with the National League team. And you know what? Being an old guy, the Nationals are still new to me, and I still think of the Expos. If you like a team's colors or their hat or something like that, then have at it. But like I said, pick an American League team. It's a good way to do it.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned hat. I actually read a book one time, and there was a guy that every year his plan was to buy the baseball hat of the team with the worst record in the majors. And he just did this every year. And his rationale was, well, they must need some help of some kind because they were the worst team in the majors. So I'm doing my part to try to help competitive balance, basically.
Yeah, that's a neat idea.
Yeah. I mean, I have no problem with buying paraphernalia. Like if Doug's buying this Nationals jersey or whatever it is, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I like the Washington Nationals logo. I like the Red Sox logo and the Tigers logo. There's nothing wrong with wearing those things. And, you know, I don't see that, oh, I'm wearing this Red Sox shirt.
No, I'll wear any team's apparel. I do have a rule, though. I'm a 45-year-old man now. I won't wear it has to be a player older than me. So it's got to be a throwback.
Okay,
for me.
I gotcha.
Well, I feel silly putting on the Castro jersey, you know, when I'm 20 years older than him or whatever. So.
I gotcha. So you've got some jersey rules.
Yes. It's got to be a throw. Like right now, we're really into hockey around here, and my kid's really into hockey, and we love the Blackhawks. But I just can't get a Taves or a Kane. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be Makita or somebody that's older than me. I just feel too silly wearing the kid jerseys.
I've got 4 jerseys in my closet. One of them is not able to be worn anymore because it was when I was just a teenager, and I've long since outgrown that. But that jersey is a Lawrence Taylor authentic Giants jersey. Lawrence Taylor was my favorite player growing up, aside from Barry Sanders. And so my mom bought me a Lawrence Taylor jersey. So he would fit my bill.
That, oh, yeah.
He would be fine to wear. I've got a throwback Walter Payton Bears jersey that my wife got me for Christmas. I finally talked her into getting me a jersey, and she bought me that. So that also fits your jersey rules. But
yep,
then the other two fail the jersey rules. I've got a home Jonathan Toews Blackhawks jersey, and then I've got a home Ray Rice Ravens jersey as well. And so those, I'm sorry to say, do not fit
well,
your qualifications.
Well, it's my silly rule, but and I might, you know, the Blackhawks, it's awfully tough not to, but you know, you'll see when you get a little older, you think, I don't know if I should be wearing this or not, but hey, you got to stay young somehow, I guess.
Well, I think the only thing worse is when you see the people that have their own name on their jersey.
Yeah, that's a no-no.
No, that's what I think is stupid. Well, guys, thanks so much for the questions on Twitter. We always enjoy the feedback and the mailbag questions. Don't forget to send us your mailbag questions. You can, like I said, email them, tweet them to us. We'd love to have them and love to answer them on Twitter. We're also pretty interactive on Twitter, so if you do interact with us throughout the week, I'd be glad to tweet back to you. I love the interaction, and I love just the competitive banter back and forth if you've ever got questions. So that'll bring us to the last segment in our show, and normally this segment is reserved for a segment we call Like It or Strike It, but we're going to give you a break on this one and not throw you to the wolves right away. Normally what we do is I don't give the guys the questions in advance. I just kind of say, hey, you're not going to prep. This is going to be off the cuff, and we're going to give you five statements. But today we're going to have a little bit different discussion, and we're going to talk a little bit about if the season started tomorrow, what would our 25-man roster look like? And I asked Josh to do this. I felt bad asking Sean to do it since he's on assignment in Sochi. But Josh did go ahead and submit his entries there since he wasn't able to be with us on the show. And I have mine ready to go. And Chris, like a trooper, you went ahead and got yours filled out before the show, so we appreciate it. And I'm going to run through mine and Josh's as we go position by position. And you just kind of let us know if you agree here. I'll throw out a name that's on my roster, and if you agree with that player, you just let me know that player makes it, and we can kind of stop here and there. We want to keep it kind of short. We got about 5-10 minutes left on the show, so let's just get started here.
Okay.
So let's start with the rotation. I have got, and this is in no particular order, but I have got Travis Wood on as part of my starting rotation, and so does Josh. Would you agree there?
Oh, yeah, I got Wood in there.
Good. Jeff Samardzija.
Yes.
And Edwin Jackson.
I got Ejax slotted right in there at number 4.
Assuming he's healthy, Jake Arrieta.
Yeah, see, now I have him starting on the DL. So
okay. So this is our first area where we
differ. Yeah. Okay. I just think they'll be cautious. Actually, he's one of the Cubs I'm most excited about seeing. I just see them saying, hey, he starts late April, no big deal, or early May.
Okay, and then Jason Hamill.
Got him.
So if you've got Arrieta on the DL, you obviously disagree with Josh and I. Where do you slot as the starter?
I have the gentleman we talked about earlier, McDonald. I have him as the starter only because of the Arrieta DL situation, basically.
Okay. So basically we're very, very similar there. We're going to skip the bullpen for right now since that's just a whole mess of basically a hot mess there, and we'll see we'll come back to that in a second. So let's go to the starting infield and outfield positions. Starting catcher, I'm assuming that we're all going to agree here, Wellington Castillo is our guy.
Yeah, there's no doubt there, and I think that's one of the guys there we can be excited about.
Yeah. Anthony Rizzo over at first base, do you agree or disagree?
Oh, that's definitely. I got him slotted there as well.
All right. Second base is one that's a little bit of an interesting one, and Josh and I both agree here that it is Darwin Barney.
Yeah, I've got Barney. I would not be surprised, like you and I talked a little off the air, I would not be surprised to see Bonifacio in there. I just have a hunch on that one. That's it.
Okay, good. Yeah, we didn't even address the Bonifacio signing in the early going because we were going to kind of talk about that a little bit in this segment. Shortstop, we already addressed this. Starlin Castro is the starting shortstop.
Most definitely.
Now, this is somewhere where I think we can go a little bit different here, and we'll see what path you've chosen. Josh and I both have Mike Olt as the third baseman.
Well, I am hoping you're right. I would love to see him have a great spring. He's 25, so as prospects go, you know, it's still young, but it's really kind of a make-or-break year for him. But I still think they're going to be on the cautious side and have him at AAA. I've got the Murphy-Bualbena, not as exciting, combination, but I'm really hoping you guys are right on Old.
Okay. Junior Lake over in the left field spot.
Yes, I've definitely got Lake. I just don't know if he'll be starting in left. I know they're concerned with, you know, his, you know, if he, is he going to produce like a left fielder, but he definitely is going to get every chance to play.
Gotcha. Ryan Sweeney makes this team out of spring training.
And I've got him probably starting in center.
And then also Nate Shearholz makes the team.
Definitely. One of your only professional hitters against right-handers.
Right. Now we go to my bench. I've got George Kotaris as our bench catcher.
Yeah, most definitely, considering they paid him a little bit, and we're happy to get him.
We've got Justin Ruggiano occupying the fourth outfield spot.
I have him as well.
I've got Luis Valbuena on one of the bench spots. I figure he can fill in at second base. He can also fill in at third base if Mike Olt needs some rest.
Yeah, I guess I had him and Murphy kind of combined, so mm-hmm. One of those guys.
And I've got Donnie Murphy on that team as well. And then my last spot on my roster, aside from the pitching staff in the bullpen, is Josh Vitters. I think Josh Vitters makes this team in the fifth outfield spot. I think he can add also some depth at third base if he needs to. Also, he could probably swing in there at first base. That's a little bit of a concern for me. I don't know how many people really mention it, but who backs up Rizzo at this point? I think that's why Vitters makes this team, because he's got some infield experience and can make the team as an outfielder, but also can back up Rizzo.
Well, here's another situation where I'm hoping you're right. I don't have Vitters, but I kind of think that Vitters and Brett Jackson are kind of in that same situation as Olt, where they're 20. I think Vitters might only be 24, but they're getting to the point where, yeah, you know, you're not going to get anything via trade because they've lost the prospect tag. So you've really got to see what they've got. So I'm hoping you're right on Vitters. This is where I'm kind of off the grid, probably. I have this Ryan Kalish as a fifth outfielder, the guy they picked up just because of the Boston connection. And I looked at him a little bit, and he did show some promise in 2012, and just seeing the Theo connection, I'm just saying as a long shot, he's the fifth outfielder.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I actually normally I look over the non-roster invitees, and I usually will pick at least one that will make the team. So far, you've revealed two and possibly three that will make the team in McDonald, Bonifacio, and Kalish. I'll be honest with you. I'll let the cat out of the bag a little bit. I have no non-roster invitees making my opening day roster, although I mentioned on the prior podcast the only guys that I could see making the 25-man roster, Kyle Hendricks is one that I think could make the team if Arrieta goes on the DL. I think you could see if Kyle Hendricks has a really good spring, maybe him get a look instead of James McDonald.
That would be interesting.
I think Mitch Meyer is a guy that doesn't get talked about enough. I think he's got some depth there, and I think he can do some good things in the outfield as well. I like Darnell McDonald. I think one of those guys could compete for that fifth outfield spot if for some reason Vitters or Brett Jackson just completely wets the bed. The other name that I thought is interesting from the bullpen, and really I don't know how much they're going to make it, and I think you're going to agree with me in a second, is Jonathan Sanchez. And I think you're going to agree that he has a chance to make this team as we go over this bullpen. So let's get right to it. I've got James Russell in my bullpen. Does he make your pen?
If he's still on the team, yeah. That's one of those assets that I think that they could trade, considering that they, you know, they got Wesley Wright and a couple other guys, who we'll talk about in a second.
So I'm assuming that he makes the team. Pedro Strop is in my bullpen.
Most definitely.
Jose Veras is in my bullpen as the closer.
Yep.
Carlos Villanueva, I don't know if he made your bullpen, but he made mine. He did not make Josh's bullpen, and that was one of the ones where we disagreed on.
No, I have him as a very valuable guy. And
I agree.
There could be another. I mean, he's definitely showed that he can do both. He can start and relief. I really think that was one of the better signings of the Theo Jed Hoyer regime because he's a valuable arm.
Yep, I agree. Aroldis Vizcaíno, I think all the reports are that he is healthy out of spring training, and I think he's going to make a big impact on this bullpen.
Once again, I'm erring on the side of, you know, I think when I did this, a lot of it was just trying not to get my hopes up because I have Vizcaíno starting at Triple-A. I hope you're right. I'm hearing he's throwing triple digits again. They're even talking about that they haven't given up the possibility of him starting in a year or two. So I hope you're right. I'd love to see him up there because if you have him and Strop as a seventh and eighth inning guys, and that could be exciting.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I've also got Wesley Wright in my pen and Blake Parker. I think Blake Parker showed enough last year where he should get the nod if he's doing anything like he did last year. I think he's going to be a good addition to the pen.
Yeah, I have both those guys in there. So the guy I didn't have, I was not aware that they delegated and said Grimm is going to be a bullpen guy. So I thought maybe he'd be starting at AAA as a starter. The thing I saw when you mentioned Grimm earlier, I think that move, I saw a big difference in obviously his velocity from as a bullpen guy. He was averaging like 93, 94. So I think if Grimm is going to be a reliever, then I might say he slots into one of those spots, definitely in the bullpen.
Yeah, yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I enjoy this exercise, and we plan on doing this every week as we lead up into opening day and just kind of comparing and refining. This is by no means something where we look at it and say, hey, this is what it's going to be. We're going to continue to monitor the notes, monitor the production, and just begin to gradually refine this. Because I think right now, if you look at this team, I could probably say you could realistically give a lock in stone, like no matter what, unless this player gets injured, he will be a part of this team. I don't know that you can really go more than about, I don't know, 15 or 16 guys on this roster that if they came out and they had absolutely no hits in spring training and 50 at bats, you know, are they still a lock? Because, for example, if Albert Pujols has no hits in 50 at bats for the Angels, is he going to get cut? Heck no.
No.
But if Junior Lake goes 0 for 50, is he going to make this 25-man roster? Probably not. You know,
no.
And so you look at that and you say, okay, boy, who are the locks at that point? And I don't know that you can make a legitimate case for that many guys on this roster that if they completely wet the bed and just said, I'm working on stuff in spring training, that they would be a lock to make this roster. So it's going to be an interesting exercise as we head into opening day.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that speaks you offensively kind of where we're at, that you're right. There's not a single lock. And even, I mean, you would think that Rizzo would be somebody that would be exempt from that, but even if he, you know, showed, you know, that you'd really, really taken a step back. But you're right. Offensively, there's not much in the way of locks.
No, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting season to watch what transpires. I'm personally optimistic. I've shared with the readers and the listeners over the last 2 weeks that I am dangerously close to predicting this team will finish 500. I haven't quite committed yet, but I'm very, very close to putting a ring on that thing and fully committing to it. I haven't quite decided yet, but I'm almost there. And the other guys are very much opposed to that concept, so it'll be interesting to see as it goes. Chris, tell everyone again the book Beyond Bartman Curses and Goats, 105 Reasons Why It's Been 105 Years. Again, where can they find you again?
Well, the easiest way is obviously on Amazon, and you can get, there's actually two versions. You can get the 104 version, which I think they've knocked off, obviously, since it's the second, or it was the first edition, and the when I updated in the fall, which, you know, you get the 105th reason and then all those nice reviews that I was fortunate enough to get. So Amazon, obviously, BarnesNoble.com, or if you just, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, or if you begin to follow me on Twitter, shoot me a message, and I'd be happy to, you know, send one to you personally with a nice little inscription like I gave to Joe.
Most definitely, most definitely. Well, Chris, thanks so much for filling in on short notice. We'd love to have you back on the podcast in the future. We really, really appreciate it.
No, it's been fun, and I love doing stuff like this. And like I said, I love what you guys do, and love following the site. And thanks a lot for everything you do.
You're welcome. That's going to put this episode of View from the Bleachers Radio in the books. That was episode number 3. As far as I know, Josh and Sean should both be back for next week's show. Again, we'd love to hear your feedback. Shoot us an email, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. And please, please, please go on iTunes, rate the show, write some reviews that are positive or negative about us, and we would greatly, greatly appreciate it because that would help get us out of the Cubs blog and Cubs podcast graveyard with all these updated podcasts like CubsCast and things like that that just aren't being updated but have so many ratings that it's hard to get past those guys. So please do us a favor and do us a solid and go on there and rate us on there as well. That's going to put this show in the books. We'll appreciate the feedback, and we look forward to talking to you next week.